Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. If you're fans of Chicago improv, then you are aware of my next guests and their show Trainwreck. Trainwreck is a completely improvised two-man play featuring Eddie Furman and Dan Bacadall. Both of these gentlemen have great resumes here in town. Furman has written and performed for Second City and is a big part of the Annoyance Theater, co-writing the hit show co-ed Prison Sluts. And Bacadall was on stage at Second City, and he now lives in L.A., where he can be seen in movies and television, including FXX's hit Legit, Life in Pieces on CBS, and Veep on HBO, where he plays the dirtball Congressman Roger Furlong. These two are reuniting in Chicago at Second City ETC on Wednesday night for Trainwreck. Ed is here with me in studio. Dan is on the phone from L.A. Guys, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Oh, man. Thanks for having us, yeah.
So let's talk about this, because the great thing about Trainwreck, and I do say this, a lot of people in Chicago improv know your material, obviously because both of you have done successful projects, but Trainwreck is different. It's not just a herald that you get up on stage. You guys are improvising a play.
Absolutely, yeah. That's one thing we wanted to do. That was one thing that interested us, was the concept of real-time improvisation. And I forgot how long we started doing this. Was it like 16 years ago or something?
Yeah, it was at least. It was before I started the main stage. So, yeah, it was 13 ago anyway. That's unbelievable.
But, yeah, we thought of it like that'd be a really fun challenge and something that we could get excited about.
What's the difference for you guys? I mean, you've done so much improv and you've performed heralds and done all sorts of performances on stage in the classical style of improv. What differentiates this project?
Yeah, for me, I think, you know, the idea of getting the opportunity to work with someone like Ed was one of those, I don't want to say a dream come true necessarily.
Oh, go ahead.
His ego doesn't need it. But he's one of those guys I really respected, and the chance to get an opportunity to play with a guy that was that smart, that funny, that was enough of a challenge that I thought, you know, when Eddie even pitched, like, well, let's not do a bunch of edits and stuff, let's just do a scene. And I thought, boy, that's going to be a huge challenge for me. I'd never done anything like that before. And that's the biggest part, is to me, it's a challenge. It's like, well, you've painted this house, now you got to live in it. Mm-hmm. And I remember early on we did one where I said something about, you know, we'll just use the garage door opener. And then four sentences later I said, we don't even have a garage. But you contradict yourself and you go, boy, it's a lot harder to keep track of the breadcrumbs you're putting on the path in a show like this.
Yeah, and if you go for like a cheap joke early on and that bombs and you're kind of stuck with the reality of the joke, you just have to sit in that for like another half an hour.
And that's really what the difference is, because, you know, you can, when you say edit, for anyone who's not familiar with an improv show, that's when actors are just going to like just start something fresh. They're going to do something for a minute and then they're like, they kind of walk through and they start something new. But this is an improvised play where you have to stay with what you guys set up.
I think one of the things that appealed about this concept to me early on was that I'm just too lazy to make all those edits to restart a scene, to restart a different character. And I did Bass Prov one time, like right after I left Second City, just had a great time just being one character and sitting there drinking beer and fishing for an hour was so great. And I thought Dan and I could have a lot of fun doing something along that line.
It's ironic that Eddie says that he was too lazy to do the edits and stuff when, to me, the world I was coming from was I had been doing so much of this, heralds and long-form shows where there are 15, 20 scenes in a half-hour show. And to me, I was tired of doing it that way because it seemed like that was just getting too easy. It's like, well, if you don't like what you're doing, just change the channel. Mm-hmm. Whereas in this, there was this challenge of, well, you can't be lazy here. Because if you fall asleep at the wheel on this one, it truly is a train wreck.
Well, when you guys started out, we're talking 15 years ago, audiences probably were expecting more of the edit kind of heralds because you guys were so proficient at it. How did the audiences respond to the idea of one improvised play, one scene?
Didn't it work right away, Eddie?
Yeah, it did. Because this was also time, you know, TJ and Dave were like drawing big crowds and Bass Prov, so it was a little more. And, you know, Chicago audiences are just so accepting about anything improv. It's such a weird town in that respect. You can like struggle for a year to like get a written show up and, you know, get every word right, have it up there, and like five people will come to it. And it's like, hey, me and this other guy are going to make, we don't have anything written. They're going to put lights on us for 45 minutes. Right. And all right, there's 100 people show up to see that.
Yeah. Yeah, we were fortunate. Second City really got behind us. They had a series of shows then called Unhinged, and they let us be one of the weekly regulars. And they were taking care of all the publicity, really. and they got people in the audience, and audiences responded. And like Eddie said, you know, the Chicago audience is educated in this improv world so much so that if you get up there and say, we're going to do something a little different, we're going to do real-time improv, which means we're going to take one suggestion and do one scene. Mm-hmm. And they go, oh, got it. Education over.
Let's talk about your guys, because both of you have been improvising for decades now, and you can, and you know, Dan out in LA, there's such a community of Chicago improvisers that are there. Eddie, yeah. Here in Chicago, I mean, you can go on stage whenever you like. What is it about your chemistry that keeps bringing you guys back together to continue Trainwreck?
We just work so well together. I think as what Dan said about me, I feel the same way about him in terms of respect. And Dan's one of those improvisers who has such great acting chops. You just get lost in one of his characters. You know, I think one of the things is there's a certain it's challenging, but it's also a certain amount of comfort. If you feel you got a hot hand, all right, you go get a little jokey if you want. If not, I just gotta, you know, if I'm not feeling it because I only improvise once a year, I just gotta.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
You're mostly writing now?
Yeah, I kind of retired from improv and I to different set of muscles for writing and stuff. But this way, if I just keep talking a little bit or keep Dan talking, he'll you know. He'll get us to the finish line.
You know, for me, it was, as a new guy in the improv scene, I watched guys like Ed, Ed in particular. And I said, this guy, you know, they always tell you to play to the top of your intelligence and stay away from blue humor and stuff. Ed was one of those guys that they said, well, the rules don't apply to this guy.
Right.
This guy can play blue, but it's at the top of his intelligence. And that was the first thing that attracted me to him. And then I understudied him on the main stage, and I got an opportunity to walk in his shoes and do the scenes that he did. And I found that there was a lot of joy in those characters and a lot of fun and a lot of playfulness in them. And then the third part of the puzzle was we had a common love of music, a similar taste in music, which gives you something to talk about. And the next thing you know, you go, I like this guy. I'd like to get on stage with this guy. And like Eddie said, I feel like I could be in a scene with him and I could go, hey, look at this magazine. And I don't have to name the magazine. I don't have to do anything. And Ed will go, oh, yeah, that magazine was published in. And whether or not it's true or not, you know, about this made-up magazine, he can weave a line of dialogue and create a story that's believable, that people walk out of there believing what they just heard, forgetting that it's all made up, right? And to me, that brings a lot of freedom. You feel like, well, I don't have to carry this whole thing. I can just say one or two things and respond. And Ed has his characters have opinions, and he's not afraid to getting an argument over the made-up opinion. And I love
That's
that.
That's great.
There's so much fun in that.
Well, for both of you guys, I mean, you've transitioned out of improv. I mean, Dan, you've had success in movies and television. And most specifically, as Eddie said, I mean, you have the combination of being an actor and an improviser. Talk about that relationship, because it shows on a show like Veep, because you could tell that you guys are both doing the script in front of you, but given a little bit of carte blanche to improvise. Talk about, you know, the relationship between being an actor and an improviser while you find work in Hollywood.
Well, you know, for me, right off the bat, when I left Chicago, I went straight to The Daily Show, and there's a lot of improvisation involved, but it's all within a very structured area, and it all had the same point of view, which is this is Jon Stewart's point of view. You just happen to be a different mouth saying it.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a difficult transition for me. And then coming out to Los Angeles and working a little here, a little there, I would never improvise on any project until they said, if you want to, feel free to play around with this. And it wasn't until I worked on Veep that they said, well, here's the script. Let's read it. Now let's get up on our feet and play with it. Now let's put the script away and let's just improvise where we think this scene would go if we had no script. And to me, that felt like the Second City process of putting together a show.
Yeah, right.
Of here's a scenario, I don't have the dialogue, so let's improvise it. And to me, I immediately found out, oh, this is why I've been studying and practicing this stuff for 15 years. As far as, you know, the part about being an actor, I always wanted to be an actor. I don't really know what that means, other than you pretend to be someone you're not, right?
Right,
so I feel like all improvisers are actors. I think maybe what Eddie's alluding to when he says that, and I've heard it before, people say it about me before, and I feel like it's Martin DeMott was a big teacher at Second City years and years ago, and he always said, I need to believe you first. If I believe you, I can care about you, and if I care about you, then I might find something you say funny. So I just said, if you say so, and that's that's always been my approach ever since.
Eddie, you know, for you, I mean, you've done a lot of work writing. You just talked about only getting on stage to improvise once a year, but you've translated that work in improvisation and being on stage at Second City to a career in writing. I mean, you're in the writer's room right now at Second City. Talk about how improv influences the work that you're doing now.
I think the great thing, it's the yes and attitude, and bringing it to the written page. It really helps with flow. And like people talk about writer's block and there's no wood to knock, but I rarely get that. Sometimes I'm not in the right mood, because if I have to write something, you start a scene, or you just start it. You mm-hmm. make an initiation, and another character in your head will follow it up. And sometimes, you know, you'll look at it and go like, oh, it's crap. Like, oh, well, why is it crap? Well, it wouldn't be crap if I changed that around. So that helps. It's being part of it is not being afraid to fail and almost embracing the failure. I love tanking a scene second behind, just knocking it out of the park, doing a mediocre scene like, why did I even bother? Why did I even bother getting up here? But tanking, humiliating yourself in front of people, second best feeling out there you could get on stage.
I'll agree with that.
Yeah. Well, this is funny because I have a ton of tech people that come through here, business people we have on the show, and they have this strange positive relationship with failure, where they're all everything about what they're incubating here at 1871 or anywhere in Chicago. If you haven't failed, you haven't lived.
There's absolutely. And
it feels very improv like. Yeah.
Yeah, you go out and you tank, and it's kind of horrible at first, but then, you know, you got 10 fingers, 10 toes. It's an improv scene. Who cares? If I was developing a medical device and I kind of failed at that, then there'd be, you know, I'd feel a lot worse. But it's entertainment.
What's your relationship to failure, Dan?
I have the exact same story as Eddie. It's a little more difficult now on, you know, on the set of a television show or something, where if you're going to fail, there's 120 people standing there, some of them holding heavy equipment while they're waiting for you to get it right. That can be a little embarrassing. But there's time for failure in rehearsal before we shoot, and there are certainly times where they go, okay, this one's for fun. And when they do that, and on Veep in particular, they will always say, okay, we got this, let's do one for fun now. And the one for fun is the one where you go, great, this is the one where I am going to fail. And maybe you fail, and maybe you kill it, but it doesn't really matter.
You know, it's interesting. Are you seeing more and more people in Hollywood adopt that principle, that philosophy? It seems like more and more television that's making its way to, you know, the FXs and the and cable channels seem to have that spirit, that improv spirit. Are you seeing, as an actor in Hollywood, a change, a more of a push towards a let's do one for fun?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the reason for it is that more and more actors are coming to television and films from an improv background. For years out here, the big comedy casting directors, and I'm going to leave someone out, but I'll just say, you know, Allison Jones, Jeanne McCarthy, and Wendy O'Brien, Jewel Bestrop, they're casting a lot of these big comedies, and they're looking for people that have improv backgrounds, because they know that what that means is, if there's enough time to do a little extra something, this is an actor that's going to be able to give you a little something extra. So more and more actors are looking for that. So they're going to the Second City. They're going to IO. They're going to the UCB, the PAC Improv, all these different places that are teaching improvisation as its own individual art form. But you can use it as a tool in your bag when you're an actor.
Let me ask you this as we wrap up. You know, Trainwreck, like you said, Eddie, you're only getting together. You know, Dan's in L.A., you're in Chicago or Milwaukee, you're coming to Chicago. You know, what's it going to take? I mean, do you see you guys getting together once a year kind of thing to bring the Trainwreck back? Or do you have plans to continue Trainwreck in a different capacity?
I don't know any plans we have other than just to – it's fun to do it once a year. I mean, it's pretty laid back. I remember the one rehearsal, quote-unquote rehearsal we had – is we met at a bar like the day before the show, like what's the dress code going to be and what Sabbath song are we going to come out to? that was it. And then like
the truth.
There's like we did 10 years without doing it, and you know, no warm-ups or anything. You just go out there and do it.
Yeah.
So I don't know if someone wants to give us a long run somewhere, I'm not opposed to it, but it's doing it once a year is kind of helps keep it special, right, Dan?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, look, this is the third year in a row that we're doing it. I think one of those years we did it twice because we did it just to do it, and then we got brought back to do it for CIF.
Right.
Yeah. But really, it's been like our plan was like, yeah, maybe we'll do something with this. Yeah, sure. Ah, yeah, we're busy. you know, and it, and
quote, hold on, like Dan's busy. I lack ambition. Let's get this straight.
Oh, trust me, I lack ambition as well. I've just been busy. But it is that thing where it's like, for me, somewhere around winter, I start to think, man, I'd like to go back to Chicago, see Eddie, do the show. You want to do that, Ed? Sure. And the next thing I know, I get an email from Allison Riley, and we're doing the show.
There you go. That's living the life, guys. Eddie Furman, Dan Bacadal, Trainwreck's annual annual train wreck, we'll call it that. Annual train wreck is going to be Wednesday night at the Second City ETC stage. Eddie Furman, Dan Bacadal, thanks for joining me, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.